Ephesians 6 and verse 5. Servants or slaves, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will, doing service as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven. Neither is there respect of persons with him. Last Lord's Day morning, we looked at verses 5 to 8 in this passage, and we had some very clear guidance to help Christians at work to behave there as Christians. That is always the desire of the true followers of Christ. How can I be consistent wherever I am? Now that I'm a Christian, what does the Lord expect of me? Not only at home and in church, but at work as well. There is the spirit of the true Christian, which is always directed to him and says, like Saul of Tarsus, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And the Lord, knowing that he puts such a desire in his people's hearts, he gives them in the practical sections of these epistles clear direction and guidance as to what he wants them to do. And we looked at this little section about Christians at work and what the Lord expects of them and what the Lord enables them to give there in their places of employment. And we saw that Christians at work are answerable to a higher master, as unto Christ, as the servants of Christ, doing their work as to the Lord, not the earthly employer or the human boss at the end of the day, but it's a service unto Christ, conscious that his eye is upon us as we do our work. And it will be done in a better fashion than ever it would have been if we weren't Christians. We will be obedient to our masters. There will be conscientiousness, fear and trembling. There will be singleness of heart, from the heart, good will, and not with eye service as men pleasers. And it will be done for a greater reward. Verse 8, whatever good thing anyone does, he will be rewarded accordingly from the Lord, whether he's bond or free. Now, if you could fill a factory, say, with Christian men and women who operated as employees according to these principles, and you compared the output of that factory and the quality of the work done there with a similar factory which was typical of the day and age in which we live, and you would see a vast, vast difference. And you see, in the days of the Roman Empire, when slavery held good, the homes which had Christian slaves in them were a marked contrast with homes that had non-Christian slaves in them. And this is what Paul is really wanting, and what the Lord is wanting. And the finest testimony Christians at work can make is by being Christians there, and not a case of hanging up the religious cloak in the wardrobe on Sunday night and being themselves on Monday morning, non-Christians really, but going into work as Christians on Monday morning and doing their work as Christians throughout the week. And the testimony will be marked and clear without such a person saying necessarily anything at all. But the very attitude toward work, the very diligence, conscientiousness, sense of responsibility, and so on will be marked, because these principles will govern and control the Christian at work. And there will be opportunities to speak and say why we are different and what have we got that others haven't got, and so on. Well, this is the Lord's guidance to such people. It's interesting to remember that originally these directives were addressed to, verse 5, servants, or literally slaves. It wasn't a modern employment situation then. It refers to household slaves of the Roman world. 60 million of them, it was reckoned, were throughout the Roman Empire in the 1st century AD. They were just bought in the slave markets. They would be captives of war or the poorest classes. They would be bought by their masters and brought into the house and made to do all the menial jobs and the menial tasks for nothing. No pay, no remuneration whatsoever. They would be treated worse than the pets, the animals of the household. Barbaric and miserable would be their lot in life. So bad was Roman slavery that between the years 80 and 72 BC, a Thracian gladiator named Spartacus led a revolt of the slaves. And so successful was he, and such an uprising and such a following he had, that around 100,000 slaves escaped and followed this man. And during those years, they waged campaigns against the Roman armies who tried to put down the revolt. At one time, it seemed as if nearly all the slaves in the Roman Empire would be joining Spartacus. And it was only when the Roman general Crassus finally crushed them that the revolt was at an end. But slavery was an intolerable thing. It was like being a prisoner of war in your own country and treated worse than prisoners of war. And people longed to be free. But you see, there were many slaves who were Christians, and many Christian slaves in the churches. And they needed to know how to be slaves to the glory of God and the glory of Christ in their situations. And Paul says that even where they are, though in bondage, humanly speaking, they are free because they belong to Christ. And though their lot is hard, he will be with them and he will help them to be Christians there. As you read the New Testament, you are amazed at where the Lord has his true people and how he helps them in those places. You turn over a few pages to Philippians 4 and verse 22, and you read this. Paul, writing from Rome, and he says to the Philippians, chapter 4 verse 22, all the saints salute you, chiefly they that are of Caesar's household. Saints in Caesar's household. Slaves in the very palace of the emperor. Christian slaves working for the emperor Nero, even. And yet the Lord is helping them. Maybe there's someone saying, I could never be a Christian. You don't know the kind of home I have to live in. You don't know the place of work where I have to go each day. I tell you, dear friends, God has his people in the hardest of places, and he gives them grace to live for him in those places. And I say that if Christian slaves have grace to be in Caesar's household, of all places, then God can give his people grace to live and work anywhere. I met not so long ago a Christian who was an undercover policeman. And although seeing the seamiest side of life, and although feeling uncomfortable so much of the time, grace was given to the man. Ah, the Lord who saves is the Lord who keeps, and the Lord who is faithful. And it's a great comfort to know that he had hundreds and thousands of slaves, humanly speaking, who were his own ransomed, blood-bought people, who were living for him in their situations and quietly going about their work to the glory of God. Let's not any one of us say that our situation at home, at work, or wherever is impossible, and we can't be Christians for him there. To say that is to deny the sufficiency of God's grace. To deny that is to say that God can't help his own people. To say that is to say that there are failures in certain cases, and there are certain instances where it's impossible to expect a person to be a Christian. No, no. God, who has providentially placed his people where they are, if they are within the will of God, he will give them the grace. The very fact that Paul writes to Christian slaves, members of the church at Ephesus, yet being treated so badly in their workplaces, and who are nonetheless the Lord's faithful people, that tells us that his grace is made perfect in weakness, and he is enough for his people. Well, now we come to the next section, and that is verse 9, where you see that in this category, it's not the slaves now who are addressed, but the masters. Masters. There were converted slave owners as well, and these were in the church, and here is teaching to help them. Now, of course, there are no slave owners today, although some men might be tempted to think otherwise, and some women might be tempted to think otherwise in their places of work, but there are none in that sense. And so how would this apply? Here are words to Christian slave owners. What's the application? Well, of course, it's to our modern employment situation, and it applies to employers, managers, foremen. Any Christian in authority with people working under them. That's the equivalent for our time. And you see how we are to use the teaching of the Bible. Although the exact setting in which the teaching is found no longer applies today, there are no masters, no slaves, thank God. But the equivalent in principle still applies. And that is those in authority who have men and women working under them. And so you see, we acknowledge that the things in the Bible, sometimes as to their setting, is time bound and applies only for that time. But the principles are timeless. And that's how we use God's word, isn't it? In so many cases, the principles lying behind the historic setting are drawn out and applied to today. I remember hearing some young man, and he was being sarcastic about the Bible, and he'd heard someone preaching and saying that the Bible was not out of date. And I heard him say, "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ox." The Bible's not out of date. Ha ha. "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ox." The Bible's not out of date. You see, what that poor foolish man didn't realize was that the timeless thing is not the fact that the object was the ox. The timeless thing is the covetousness, which is in every heart, in every age and generation. If you wanted to bring it up to date, you'd say, thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's car or whatever. But that's by the by. Covetousness is the timeless thing. And the fact that we should not covet, otherwise we break the 10th commandment. You see how the unbeliever is so foolish in his dismissing of the Bible by such trivialities. No. We don't come to the Bible and say, because there are no masters and no slaves around today, this section doesn't apply to us. No. The principles there apply to us and will till our blessed Lord comes again. The word of our God endureth forever. And therefore, we look at these things in principle. Well, when we come to the masters here, you'll notice what Paul does. He says that the directives and Christian responsibilities for slave owners or for those in authority in the workplace, they are exactly the same as it was for the others. Ye masters, do the same things unto them. Now, he's not saying, of course, that those who are employed and those who are employers are in the same position. The position is different, but what he's saying is it's the same Christian obligation on both sides. The same things apply. Now let's see how that will work out. Look back at verse 5. And these words were addressed to servants, but they apply to the masters. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh. Now what Paul was saying was to act as those who show respect to those in authority and to work well for them. Well, Paul says the same will apply to the masters. Respect for the workers and fair treatment. Look at Colossians 4 and verse 1. Paul puts it like this. Masters, give unto your servants that which is just and equal. And there it is. And that's how to bring the best out in those who are under you. And so much of the Bible is only really common sense and good psychology. And we know, don't we, that management, employers, those in authority who treat others well, who are respectful and fair, who look after their interests, that is much more guaranteed to get a good response from them. Now, you may not know it, but what you put on your beef burger and chips from time to time, Heinz tomato ketchup, was really the product of a Christian. Because Henry J. Heinz was one of God's people, and the Lord blessed him greatly in his business. And when he had built up his factories producing those 57 varieties, he operated them, managed them, treated his workforce as a Christian. Now listen to this. Henry Heinz was the first American company to introduce a wealth of staff welfare facilities. He provided dining rooms, locker rooms, dressing rooms, gymnasia, a swimming pool, uniforms, free hospital treatment and dentistry, free life insurance, and further education facilities. No wonder few people ever left the great Heinz family at Pittsburgh. At the centre of it all, Heinz remained, in the words of one of his executives, a monument of inner peace. Now that's treating people as a Christian. That is doing the same things unto them, that which is just and equal. And if that is followed, even humanly speaking, then things will go a lot better in the factory or the workplace. But Christians have an opportunity to shine in these things. Well, there's one example. Look at another one, verse 5. Fear and trembling. We saw that on the part of the servants, that was a conscientious concern to please Christ, whom they really are working for. Them saying, how would the Lord have me to do my work? How can I please him in the standard that I maintain? And what Paul is wanting is for the masters to say the same. How would Jesus have me treat my staff? How would he have me to behave toward them? Fear and trembling, it means that great concern and anxiety to do what's right and what's pleasing to the Master in heaven. You see how Christianity comes in and sanctifies these things and elevates them and lifts them onto a new level altogether. That's what the Lord wants. And then look again in verses 5 to 7. In singleness of heart, from the heart, with goodwill. That was all expressive of a diligence, a conscientiousness on the part of the servants. Yes, the heart is in the work. There's goodwill behind how it is done. And that is recognised. Anyone can tell the difference between a lazy, time-serving worker and someone who's got heart for the job and someone who's doing it with goodwill, willingly. Well, that's what the Lord wants. That's the kind of difference that's made when a Christian is doing his work. Well, says Paul, masters, do the same things unto them. In other words, you also be an example of that heartiness in your work. And you also put goodwill behind everything that you do. Because you see, nothing annoys men and women more than when those who are over them in the workplace are lazy and skiving. That's the surest way to breed resentment and cynicism. But Paul says, don't any master expect a level of work from the servants that he, the master, is not prepared to put in himself. And of course, that's the way to win respect from the workforce. I had the opportunity in my fill-in jobs to work for a while in a laundry. And this laundry had got to be seen to be believed. It was really something out of Dickens. It was three cottages knocked into one. It had primitive machines and facilities, very little ventilation, the most unhealthy place to work, so steamy and hot, just one tap to get a drink from when you were thirsty. And really the pay was a pittance. And although conditions were so bad, work was so hard, and money was so little, and although I heard lots of complaints from people, one complaint I didn't hear, and that was concerning the owner, his son, and the manager. Because give them that. When the owner came in, he was the one who started doing the work. He could have just come in and gone out, but he got involved. The son, the owner's son, was working full pelt all the time. And the manager too, who ran the dry cleaning side of the business, he was always busy. Never a word about the laziness and unfairness about those over us. No matter how bad the conditions generally were, you go back there now and you'll find there is in its place new houses. The thing had been levelled and redeveloped, and so it sure should have been. But singleness of heart, from the heart, with goodwill. Christian employers and those in authority have an opportunity to shine when they do their work as they would expect those under them to do their work. Paul says that will be the Christian way, and that will win the respect of those under them. But look again, verse 6. It's all illustration of what Paul says. Do the same things unto them. You see, it's not one law for the slave and one law for the master. It's the same principle for both. Look at verse 6. Not with eye service. Yes, we all know about that. When those who are at work do it with eye service. They are only busy at their work when the eye of the foreman or someone else is watching them. But when that eye is somewhere else, then they slacken off and waste time. Not with eye service. Because Jesus, the Master in heaven, always has his eye upon us. But it's the same for the Master. Look, verse 9. Your Master also is in heaven. Neither is there respect of persons with him. And that perhaps is the most challenging part of it. You see, there is one above all tiers of human authority, one higher than all management and company directors, and his eye is upon every master. And on the day of judgment, it will be found that there is no respect of persons with him. And on that great day when we are all gathered before that throne, slave and slave owner will stand together on the same level. God is no respecter of persons, no special deference paid to the slave owner because he is rich and powerful and privileged. No, no. Exactly the same. So it will be for us all. Yes, the man or woman on the shop floor and the highest flying executive will be standing side by side on the day of judgment. And Christians in positions of privilege and authority over a workforce are to exercise that authority and all that goes with it in such a way as to be well pleasing to him, the Master in heaven. See, that's what Heinz did. And is that the reason why even today that company is still prospering? There aren't any Christians in the Heinz factories today, I don't think. But the founder of it was a bright Christian, godly man, who threw all his Christian energies and principles into building up the business. God prospered and blessed him, brought him safely through bankruptcy even, and set him on his feet again to make a new beginning, and God blessed him. Can't imagine any of those factories being open on Sunday. Not at all. The Sabbath was honoured. No Sunday work. But Heinz knew that he was accountable to someone greater than any factory owner, someone more powerful than any man with authority over others working for him. And it wasn't with eye service. It was knowing that he had a master in heaven, and there is no respect of persons with God. That's the most sobering thought of all. You see, God doesn't give special treatment to some and not to others. Those who now are very privileged and have it their way at the moment, those who can buy their way into things or out of things, those who only have to speak and people jump, they'll be standing next to their subordinates and to the most ordinary working people, side by side together before the tribunal of Almighty God, a master in heaven, and there is no respect of persons with him. See how kind the Lord was, because even Christian slave owners could be tempted to be harsh, couldn't they? I don't know how Philemon did. I presume he was a kind slave master to Onesimus and others, but there was that temptation perhaps to abuse the power and the authority and to neglect the interests and the welfare of the slaves. And so the word comes, masters, you will be in the same boat as slaves on the day of judgment. No respect of persons. And so that was a check, wasn't it? And so the Lord was really securing the interests and the welfare of Christian slaves by telling Christian masters to be careful how they treated them, and to know that whatever they did would come back and be reviewed and either rewarded or otherwise at the judgment seat of Christ. And that's so lovely. There's not a word in the New Testament about the abolition of slavery and about the rights and wrongs of it. That was to come later in the providence of God. Paul is not setting in motion social revolution and the overthrowing of systems and so on. That would have been most unwise, because Christianity at that time was accused of being reactionary and troublesome. And so God the Holy Ghost didn't lead Paul to condemn slavery at that time. In the fullness of time, slavery would be wiped out by the principles of Christianity, but not at the moment. Suffices to protect the well-being of slaves. And whenever they had Christian masters, those slaves had the best lot of all slaves in the Roman world. Wasn't that lovely? Masters would be blessed if they had Christian slaves. Slaves would be blessed if they had Christian masters. Christianity comes and invades these things and lifts them up to a higher level, sanctifies and beautifies the thing. And so it is found today. Christian workers are the best asset a firm or a company has. Christian employers, Christian people over others. The best way to get the most and the best from people. Yes, wherever Christianity comes, true Christianity, it brings nothing but blessing in its train. Well, there's one more. Do the same things unto them. Look at verse 9. One thing that is unique to the masters. Verse 9. Forbearing, threatening. Literally, in the Greek, forbearing the threatening. And everybody would know what that meant. The threatening. Like at school in days gone by, if you heard the phrase the cane, every schoolboy knew what it meant. The threatening. Slave owners, of course, could use threatening. The lash or the pool of piranha fish to strip you to a skeleton in minutes or whatever. because a slave was just an object that you could get rid of. A slave had no rights. And if a slave didn't please the master, away with it, kill it, put it to death, and go and get another one, better than it. That's all, the rights a slave had. Ah, Christian masters, forbearing the threatening. Leave off. None of that. Shouldn't be necessary. If you are being the Christian master the Lord has called you to be, ideally you shouldn't have to resort to that kind of thing. Warnings, threatenings. Doesn't mean to say, of course, in our workaday situation that those in authority must never issue a warning or must never speak about the consequences to an employee if the conduct is not improved. That's not what it's saying. It's saying that ideally there should not have to be that kind of thing. That there should be that mutual respect and the willingness upon the part of the workers to do what is their duty, forbearing, threatening. The relationship should be such that there should never have to be this kind of thing. Well, dear friends, we can only pray that this sort of thing might leaven our society. Days gone by, you know, in the last century, when there were many more Christians around, like Heinz and others, who started factories, started manufacturing industries, who commenced businesses, Sabbath keeping, men of integrity, men of such charity and kindness to their workforce, and so many Christian workers who did their work as unto the Lord. No wonder this country prospered in Victorian and Edwardian days. No wonder we were the workshop of the world. No wonder we led other countries in the world in our inventiveness, in our dynamism, in our progress and in our prosperity. Where the gospel comes and multiplies conversions, and then people in those situations live as Christians, things take off. And the reason why, for so many decades in this century, things have gone down, aside from the changed conditions, which we acknowledge have made a difference, political things and in industry and manufacturing and all those other considerations which have had a part to play, and we understand that. But really, at the heart of it, is the reason why things have gone down so much, and why we're struggling to recover from a recession, is not really at the end of the day political or industrial or economic. The problem at the end of the day is men's hearts, and how those in authority treat those under them, and how people do their work. That's the problem. But where there is the Christian ethic, where there is the salt of the earth and the light of the world, where there is the grace of Christ motivating people, there things move forward, and there things take off, and righteousness exalts a nation. And we can only pray, God, that He'll multiply Christians and save many in our day and fill places of work with Christians, because that is the country's best asset, and it's that that elevates and lifts things up and improves things. You can pass laws, you can get things changed, you can impose things from above, but at the end of the day it's when men's hearts are changed and attitudes are different and principles different which govern them, that's what makes the difference. And in the Roman world, in the households where slavery were commonplace, there were households aplenty where people were absolutely astonished to see how things operated. Slaves in the way they did their work, masters in how they treated their slaves, households which were blessed because of it all. A quiet revolution was taking place. Things were changing. Something that the might of Imperial Rome could never have done. Christianity civilizes, ennobles, and gives a gentleness and a tenderness to things, which makes all the difference to people and situations. And the time would be coming, in the fullness of the centuries as they rolled on, whereas the gospel came to different parts of the known world and gradually civilized it and changed it, the very institution of slavery itself was called into question. And by 1833, through the efforts of William Wilberforce, a Christian in Parliament, and others helping him, slavery, the slave trade, was abolished throughout the British Empire. In 1863 in the USA, Negro slavery was abolished in the states of America because of the influence and operation of the gospel. What a mighty gospel it is that converts and changes men's hearts and brings about such a change and a revolution, changes the world for the better. Oh, may God bless his gospel. But dear friends, we are in the modern employment situation. And may we who are under authority and others who are in authority wherever we are, if we are in a place of work, may that gospel be lived out in the grace and strength of our Lord Jesus Christ. May these things we have read about and heard about in these couple of weeks, may they be the things that grip us and guide us and enable us to please our Master in heaven. May the Lord bless his word. Let us